Okay. So today is Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. This is Jenny Kniff, and I'm here in Henderson, Nevada with Elmo Douglas. So thanks for being with me today.
Certainly.
Could we start by talking about where you were born and a little bit about your family?
Yes, I was born in Baltimore, Maryland in 1932. And we were not even a middle-class family. I think we're kind of a poor family. When you're poor, you don't know that you're poor, particularly in your youth, you know. I think I had all the things that I ever really wanted. I didn't have a bicycle, but I did get a pair of skates for Christmas, or something of that sort. And Maryland was, and Baltimore, and the state of Maryland were, all the institutions were segregated in those days, in 1932. And even up until 1954, the schools, until the Supreme Court ruled, all the schools were all segregated in the city of Maryland. And but I don't have any regrets, because I think the teachers in those days really were concerned about education and bringing the students up. And I think I had a pretty good education.
Where did you go to school in Baltimore?
Douglas High School.
Okay.
It's still there in the city of Baltimore. Forever, I guess. Huh? Mm-hmm. It has changed locations, though, since I think it's off of Gwynn Saul's Parkway now.
And did you go to your neighborhood elementary school?
Yes, the Robert Brown something, uh-huh. Elliot. I'm not sure. I can't remember the name. It was School 104.
Okay.
In Baltimore. And from there, Booker T. Washington Junior High School. I don't know whether that is still exists anymore. I'm not sure either.
Mm-hmm.
But in all those cases, I think the educational program was pretty positive and very good. We didn't have all the programs that were available in some of the other schools, mm-hmm. but we didn't know that, so...
Yeah.
We made the best of what we had, you see.
And what was your neighborhood like?
Very nice.
And what did you call your neighborhood? Because there's a lot of names for all the little neighborhoods.
What neighborhood?
Was it?
I tell you where I grew up, right across from Druid Hill Park.
Uh-huh.
Right in the 2500 block of Druid Hill Avenue. You know where that is?
I do.
Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. Well, right there.
It's a nice spot.
And it wasn't until, I think 1950... just before I started college, mm-hmm. We moved, and my father died the same year. Just as I'd been at Hopkins about 3 months, and he passed. Mm-hmm. But the neighborhood was good. It was a quiet neighborhood in those days. I don't know what it's like today. Some neighborhoods have changed so radically they've become threatening to old people like me. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, that's one thing I wanted to ask you about was that. So that area where you grew up near Druid Hill Park was... you know, the uprisings that happened in Baltimore.
Yes, just recently, North Avenue and...
around Mondawmin. So a lot of that was really close to where you grew up.
Not far from that at all. I used to walk through that neighborhood to go to school and the like, so...
So did you, I mean, what did you feel like your neighborhood was like then? Because today it seems like there's, I mean, it varies from street to street, but there's a lot of poverty there and a lot of vacant houses. What was it like in the
You know, in those days, it was a very lovely community. It was kind of isolated in the sense that it was a black neighborhood. But you knew everyone. I couldn't do wrong at school, because before I got home, my mother would know about it. Yeah, and you know, the doctors and the lawyers and everyone else lived right in the same community. Now they're spread out.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think you have that kind of a situation. And so the neighborhood, I think, has probably declined quite a bit since in recent years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So people of means moving out to the suburbs,
yes,
and things
uh-huh.
like that, yeah.
But I mean, I had a wonderful childhood, no complaints, you know. We'd play out after school, we'd go out, all the kids would get together, we'd do dumb things, play, and particularly on Halloween.
Tell me about that.
We never got treats. There were no treats in us. We just tricked. We had a thing called moving night or something, where we'd go on a person's porch and remove the furniture and take it around and park it on the street and around the corner or something like that. Or to ring doorbells and run. It was so,
funny. So that was your hijinks on Halloween.
And I, you know, looking back, we made our toys in those days. We made the stilts, and we took the tin cans and tied a string, and that was the phone thing. It was crazy, but we had a wonderful time. Mm-hmm. You know.
And what did your parents do?
My mother was a secretary in the school system. My father was a janitor at the Department of Recreation down on Biddle Street, I think it was. Biddle, somewhere near Preston. Mm-hmm. One of those old mansions down there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mount Vernon neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And what kind of education did they have?
My mother finished high school. She finished Douglas High School, in fact. It goes back. Yeah. They were both from Virginia. My father, I think, was out of school right around the third or fourth grade. So he didn't have much of an education, but he provided for us and made us comfortable as possible, you know. Mm-hmm. So it was interesting.
Yeah. And
I'm a Douglas, and I have two S's in Douglas. You might not know this, and a lot of people don't, but two S's signifies poor.
Tell me about that.
That's just a story.
Yeah.
I tell all the people from Hopkins, so don't charge me too much. Don't bug me. I don't have any money.
And were you always a good student growing up?
Yes, until I got to Hopkins. It was very, very difficult. But I talked to a lot of my old classmates. We all agree that Hopkins wasn't easy. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a real test. But I think I was at quite a disadvantage because my classmates all came from Baltimore Polytech, and they had all those advanced programs. And I don't know, in those days they could leave Baltimore Polytech and go to any engineering school in the country in the second year. Hmm. But a lot of me liked to go to Hopkins, and they right in the same class. They started right off in the freshman class, and boy, it was an eye-opener. Mm-hmm. But those experiences were good. I had a wonderful professor, Dr. Morrill was his name. Mm-hmm. And he saw that I lacked certain things, and he had me come to his office every afternoon after class. And he would drill me with this and this, put me at the blackboard, and he would just, you know. But he was very helpful. He helped me an awful lot with the mathematics. And I had to catch up, or I couldn't have completed. That was the hard year. Mm-hmm. The very first year was the hardest of them all.
And how did you, let's see, so tell me about like sort of deciding to apply to Hopkins or where to go to college. What was that like for you?
You know, the first black went to Hopkins in the engineering department in 1946. A gentleman by the name of Fred Scott. I don't know if he's still living or not.
I don't know either, but I have seen an interview with him before, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then the third was Jerome Julius. He just passed a couple of months ago. Do you know that name?
I don't know.
Well, he was an interesting person. And then I was the third black to finish. We were all in different schools in the engineering department. I think Fred was a chemical engineer. Jerome was mechanical, and I was in the civil department. Mm-hmm. And because of that, I became civilized. Does it help? Jerome just passed, and he was a very interesting person, very smart. And he was on the board of the library or something in Howard County, Maryland, or one of the counties there. Mm-hmm. And he wrote a lot of books, and he wrote some poetry and haiku and all kinds of things like that.
He's a Renaissance man. Mm-hmm. So when you were in high school, did your counselor or teacher encourage you to apply to Hopkins? I mean, being one of the first African-American students, you didn't have many, one else from your high school.
I think they were all surprised. I applied and I was accepted, and I think they were all kind of surprised.
Uh-huh.
I had some offers from other schools, but Hopkins was so convenient and so close. And I don't think I could beat the education that I received. I couldn't have gotten that education someplace else. And it was right at home. Mm-hmm. So I could live at home and go to school, and I'd catch the bus every day and go to college.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you lived at home for all 4 years?
I lived at home all.
You were pretty close to campus. I mean, being in your neighborhood, it's not too far away. I'll pause this for a second.
Don't usually leave messages.
Yeah. Huh. Oh, well, you can listen to it later. It's confusing. So let's see. Oh, so we were talking about you living at home and commuting to school on the bus.
Yes.
Okay.
I think a lot of the people who lived in the area of the school were kind of always wondering, what was I doing getting off the bus at Hopkins with all my books?
Uh-huh.
It's kind of a rare thing. I would imagine at the university now there's quite a few blacks. Well, they have all sorts there at Hopkins, and it was very good. Mm-hmm. There was no problem going to school there. In fact, I think those who wanted to be a friend of mine became friends of mine. Now, those who didn't, they just stayed away.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a knocking down walls or fighting, you know.
Yeah.
It was easy.
Did Hopkins ever say anything to you? How do I say this? So there was someone else that was interviewed, Ernie Bates. Do you know who he was?
Who is that?
Ernie Bates. He was also an early African-American student. I think he might have come a little after you.
Probably after me.
Maybe, but he said that when he was accepted, he got a letter from Hopkins with, you know, his acceptance letter. It said something like, you know, you will be one of the first African-American students here. I hope that doesn't bother you. Did they ever tell
you
anything?
No, I don't recall anything like that.
Okay.
No.
Yeah, so but it sounds like it didn't bother you.
No, none at all. I had some of my classmates I'm still in contact with, mm-hmm. even today.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we're losing a lot of those every year.
As you get older.
Yeah, that kind of hurts sometimes.
Yeah.
But there's one gentleman in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We talk maybe two or three times a week.
And what's his name?
Lou Robinson.
Okay, yes. Yeah,
you might have seen us. We were in the Hopkins magazine together.
I did see it.
Friends for Life, and we're pretty close.
Mm-hmm. So how did you come to meet him at school?
We were all in the same class.
Mm-hmm.
You know the name Condor? He became a Hopkins Distinguished Alumni or something like that. He was the one, first one. He was literally killing the dogs and bringing them back to life by compression. And he was onto something, so he became a lecturer to the med school and to the fire departments and all the departments around, leading to CPR. His,
uh-huh. You know.
And he worked with Dr. Kornhoven at the time, and that was the one who did the, what do you call that device that?
Oh, the defibrillator? Or?
Yeah, yeah, I think that's Kornhoven's thing.
So who was Condor? Was he a classmate?
He was a classmate.
Oh,
right,
okay.
Right. In those days, I didn't have a car. These guys would pick me Lou would pick me up. Condor would pick me up, take me to school. So it was a wonderful association.
Mm-hmm.
And another guy, Knickerbocker, I remember him very well. I haven't been in touch with him for a long time now, but well, it was a wealth of friends.
So you were all in the engineering program?
Today? All in the civil program. No, that's not true, because Guy was in electrical engineer. He was the one who was doing the chest compression of the dogs.
Right, that makes sense. And so what did people in your neighborhood say about you going to Hopkins?
Oh, I think it was always very positive. And they pushed me and tried to help.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it was, I mean, that was quite an achievement.
I would think so,
yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, being the third, we were all quite successful. All three of us who started finished and got degrees.
Mm-hmm. All three of the African-American students, is that what you mean, or the engineering students?
What was that?
All three of...
The blacks who, well, I was the third one, but yes. The other two finished, and I finished also.
Mm-hmm.
So that was quite an achievement. So many people start school, and they drop out. It was not easy. And it's probably even harder today, but you attract a wealth of knowledge to Hopkins. They get the very best students sometimes. I don't know how they made a mistake with me.
I don't think they did. So that first year was a big adjustment, getting used to that?
It was an adjustment because leaving an all-black school in there is just the opposite. You know, It wasn't easy. But we had some interesting people in the class. I was in class with, I think it was the Prime Minister of Japan's son. I was in the school band. Gabby, the director was?
Yes, I wanted to ask you about him. Conrad Gebelin, is that
his name? Gebelin, that's
okay.
It.
Yeah. So I was reading about him because by the time you got there, he had already been the band director for something like 30 years, and then he was there for another 15 years after you left. So.
Yes,
but tell me about him, because I haven't talked to anyone who...
Oh, he was a wonderful person. The Japanese prime minister's son, I think he played the drums in the school band. I played the tax saxophone and the tuba. And it was interesting. Wonderful person, you know. And I never felt that any of the professors... were against me being at the school. They were all very helpful to me, you know. So it was positive, not like, I don't know who pushed that, because, you know, sometimes you have to train people to accept. But it seemed kind of natural. I had no problem whatsoever. If there was a problem, I didn't recognize it, you know. And sometimes people look for problems, and I wasn't in the mood to look for problems. I was there to get an education, and I think, and it was quite rewarding. It worked out very well for me.
Yeah. So, when you were in the band, were you playing at athletic events and things?
Is that what yes.
Tell me about that.
Indeed. I played tuba, I said, and saxophone, and that was always a positive. They would travel with the football team or the baseball team, whoever it was. On one occasion, we stopped for lunch in Delaware, and everybody jumped off the bus to go in and have lunch, and they refused to serve me. So some people had already placed the orders, but I went back to the bus and they followed. They didn't stay.
Everybody went back with
me. Everybody went back with me. Huh. So in that regard, it was a good team play.
Yeah, you know? Definitely. You know?
But that was all, we were playing at the school band, and well, I don't know what Hopkins band was today, but it was really ragtag. It wasn't very many of us. We didn't have school uniforms with all the regalia. You were lucky to just get a horn and play, you know?
And had you learned to play in
I had learned to play earlier, yeah. Yes.
I have a picture of you, actually. Yeah. I'll show you.
Oh,
you had letter jackets at least. I think you're over there on the left
side.
What
is this?
That's a picture of the band from the yearbook.
Yeah, there is. How about that?
Yeah, so you guys are all wearing, or maybe sweaters with the H on them. So
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we were really dressed up that day.
Yeah, I think you look very sharp.
Yes.
Well, that's good. So, and you were playing for lacrosse games or football and lacrosse?
Football and lacrosse.
Okay. Was it hard to balance that, I mean, traveling and stuff with your schoolwork?
Oh, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't that bad at all. It was a lot of fun. And sometimes you need that, you know, you need a break. And I'm trying to think of some other things. But Gebelin was a beautiful person, you know. Even before I started Hopkins, I was invited to participate in a play because they needed a black actor. It was Bus Stop by who? The name of the play was Bus Stop.
I don't know that play.
By a famous, rather famous playwright. So I played the part.
And this was after you were accepted, but before you enrolled?
That's right. That's right. In between. And so that was an experience in itself, you know. I was a chauffeur or something like that in a school play.
Had you ever acted before?
No. But I don't think any of us ever acted before.
Uh-huh. You know.
It's a lot of fun.
And did you, so you weren't living on campus, but you had all these friends on campus. Did you socialize with them outside of classes?
Not really. You know, Hopkins was all male at the time. You can, well, you can look at the picture and see. And but we would go out to dinner and the like from time to time. But so often, the social activities often was in the ROTC building. Is that still on campus?
There is still an ROTC building. I don't know if it's
it
the same place.
It was a little shack, an army shack built on campus. So often we'd have food brought in and things of that sort.
Okay, you know? Like dances there or things like that? Or a dance, something like that? Or just a dinner?
No dance. Mm-hmm. We did have the senior prom or something. But in between, I don't think it was anything. And I attended the prom. I had fortunately, I found a date at that time, and it was great. So, but after the prom was all ended, I mean, that was the association. We went our way, and they went theirs. You see, you bring back a lot of memories for me.
Well, that's good. Yeah, I was curious about whether you had gone out, you know, in Charles Village or anything with your friends, because. You know, I think that there were probably still segregated establishments around there.
So it was quite limiting then.
So you stayed on campus for the most part.
Yes.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. And what were to talk about your academics again, what were kind of the roots of your interest in engineering? Did you went into Hopkins knowing you wanted to be in the engineering school and all that. So how did you develop that?
Oh, a friend of mine, you know, in high school, was pursuing architecture at Howard University in Washington, D.C. Are you familiar with them?
Mm-hmm.
And we were pretty close friends, so I decided, well, maybe I'll try to pursue engineering. And I had pretty good grades in high school, better than the ones I had at Hopkins, but I survived it. I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very, very good. But I had fun at that. It wasn't all work. It was sometimes fun and games. And we had some characters in the class who were always up to some no good. In fact, one of my good friends, Bill Hemsley, he's passed now. If we had had to vote on who would be the least likely to succeed, he would have gotten top honors. But he ended up with a firm, I think, with some 80 employees.
Really? And why would you have called him least likely to succeed?
Well, see, he was crazy. Yeah. But he had a firm in Pennsylvania, and he had a home on the Eastern Shore. What's the name of the river? Wye Plantation. He was right next to Wye Plantation, and often when Netanyahu and Arafat met to sign their peace accord, he said they were right next door to him. And he said every morning they walk right across his property, taking a stroll.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
He was unlike me. He was an arch conservative, but we were friends, and we talked and we had a grand time. When I visited him, I'd go back for a reunion. He would say, Elmo, you know where the house is, and the key is up in the windowsill. Just go in. I'll be down on the weekend. Just go in and have a ball. That's the kind of person he was.
Nice.
Unlike what we have today in the Congress where people hate each other, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You could be opposite, but you could still be friends and you could talk.
Uh-huh.
But you can never resolve any problem without talking.
That's true.
And we have to reinstill that with our present Congress. I was reading an article in the paper this morning. They said there's literally hate going on. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Can you get anything done?
It's a difficult time.
Well, I'm straying from.
Oh, well, actually, you piqued my interest and then you went away from it. So about Bill Hemsley, you said he was crazy. Can you tell me any good stories about him?
I don't want to rat on him.
Okay. only if you think they're appropriate.
Well, I think he and I were involved in a chemistry, no, electrical engineering lab, where it was a simple experiment where you had to take copper sulfate, which is a blue solution, and separate the copper from the sulfate or something, I don't know. He got the brilliant idea, not me now, but he got the brilliant idea of substituting the blue ink for copper sulfate, and was driving the professor nuts. He looked at the setup, everything was right, but the experiment wouldn't work. Those kind of things.
Okay. And did the professor ever figure it out? Probably.
No.
That's funny. Yeah. Do you have any other sort of memorable professors? You talked about Dr. Morrill.
Dr. Morrill.
Who was a mathematician, is that right?
You know, I've lost track of some of the names. I just don't remember. But I do remember him. Mm-hmm. He was very, very helpful for me. Very helpful.
And how
Hubbard. He was the head of the civil engineering department, I think, at the time. Do you know that name?
Sounds familiar, yeah.
Hubbard.
What was he like?
Wonderful, wonderful. I think Hubbard had a son at the university at the time. He left school and joined the Navy and became a Navy pilot, but I think he had a bad crash or something. He lost his son. I think it was Hubbard. I'm not sure about that. But he was helpful, too. So, and some others. I mean, I remember the faces, and most of them are gone today.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. And did you remember, or did you ever have any interaction with the presidents of Hopkins, President Bronk or President Reed?
Yeah, Eisenhower was there when I was there.
Eisenhower was there, okay.
Yes. And Bronk.
Uh-huh.
Is it Bronk?
Bronk, yeah.
Yeah, Bronk.
Did you see much of them on campus?
No, I didn't see them. I think the person I did run into was... the professor who had spent a lot of time in the Far East, and he was involved with one of the big communist kind of things.
Was he the professor who got in trouble for
spies or something?
Was it Owen Lattimore? No.
Lattimore.
Okay.
Owen Lattimore. Yeah.
So you,
I had seen him on campus, but I mean, I had no association with him.
You'd never had classes
no.
with him.
No. Uh huh.
Okay.
In those days, they had the McCarthy investigations and everything of that sort. So, but he had spent years in the Orient. And someone said to me, he said he sounds Oriental. He spent so many years in the Orient. Yeah. Orrin Latimer. I can't remember the other people who were involved in that. Mm-hmm. Will you excuse me? I've got to go to the restroom.
Sure, let me pause it. Okay, so let's see.
Doing the same thing?
Yeah, similar. Also working in the archives. So let's see. We were just talking about people you remembered from campus.
Mm-hmm.
Did you often? So I wanted to ask too about like your interaction with other people on campus, like what do you call them? Like people who worked in the cafeteria and things like that. Were you a regular eater in the cafeteria, or did you usually bring your lunch?
Well,
it was
the cafeteria. I think was in Levering Hall.
Uh-huh.
Is it still in? Is it still there?
In the basement.
Yes. Yeah.
So did you eat there regularly?
Yes, I did.
Uh-huh.
I was always in the hall. I mean, that's where we all met after class, played cards and that sort of thing, you know? But I don't remember any of the names there now.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I was just wondering if maybe they had, you know, affection for you because you were a local guy and all this stuff.
Oh, perhaps, but I never had any real association with them.
Mm-hmm.
The help, you're saying.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. The help, that sounds like a movie, doesn't it?
That's right, that is a movie.
Yeah.
So let's see, is there anything else, any other sort of memories that jump out that you are coming to mind as we're talking about being on campus or being in class?
No, I can't think of anything, but I can say one thing that the education paid off later on for me. And it made my job easy. I wasn't the very best of students, but I had good sense later to surround myself with people who were quite knowledgeable. And a lot of engineers are pretty good with the numbers, but they're poor writers. And so I would use my writing talent to correct their reports.
Okay.
It made a big difference in life. Uh-huh. But I was never hesitant about getting people who were a lot smarter than me. Made my job easy. Mm-hmm. And at Hopkins, getting back to where you, what else? You know, I think at the time I was there, it was just the two of us, two blacks at the University, Jerome and I. So we were kind of free to do almost anything. And I think at that time, I became aware that segregation is a funny kind of a thing. It depends on where you are and who you are and the numbers. Like I said, Jerome, we were no threat to anyone. As I reflect back, I think the Jew might have had a little more difficult than I did at the university. It's funny that way. And you become aware of that. So I'm not the only one being persecuted in this life. Mm-hmm. You see it elsewhere.
That's an interesting comment, because I have actually interviewed a Jewish student that was there in the 50s, and he did have a lot to say about, you know, sort of feeling like he didn't belong in certain circumstances.
And yes.
Did you notice anything like that on campus, or, you know?
I can't think of any particular incident, that's mm-hmm. what you said, no. But I know often that I could be invited to some things, and my buddy Lou wouldn't get invited to, you see.
Very interesting. One of those things. Yeah, you know? That's very interesting.
Yeah, so it was a learning curve, you know, and you suddenly realize I'm not the only one being persecuted in this world, you know, and we certainly see it today. It's universal hate, almost like it is indeed hate is legislated. It's taught and legislated in a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And that's not right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think the first awareness of that was on campus at Hopkins. Mm-hmm. Because I could literally do almost everything. Anything, you know. I was never invited to any of the fraternities. But that's understandable. I don't know that I would want to do it. But I did go out and mix real easy on campus with everyone. Mm-hmm. It was free. And like I said, I think all the professors were, maybe they were taught to treat me good. I don't think so, but I think it was a natural. Their mission was to teach, and they did a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm. And how do you think your classmates would remember you from that time? What would they say about you?
the same thing I said about Hemsley. The second least likely to succeed.
Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Well, your professors must have seen some talent in you that they were willing to.
You know, I
time.
Did pretty good in school. I think the one course that almost kept me from graduating was political science. I had no interest, and I don't think I wasn't into that sort of thing. The professor was Dr. Malcolm Moose. You know that name?
I do.
I think he was the chairman of the Maryland Republican Committee or something at the time. I think he later turned out to be one of Eisenhower's speechwriters, you know. But it didn't mean anything to me at the time. And then I had another professor you mentioned, do I remember any other? Political science. And it was a professor who was he was taught chemistry. Orange juice man. What was his name? He always promoted oranges or something. Oh, God.
I don't know.
He was well renowned. Oh, and it might hit me before you leave. But he was interesting, too. Uh-huh. Very interesting.
And he was chemistry?
Yes. Oh, names are coming back. Dr. Hoffman, mechanical engineering. I took a class in mechanics or something of the sort. And he announced before the class, he said, look at the student on your right and the left. Half of you won't be here by the end of the semester. But he was very deliberate. I remember that. He was very, very deliberate in his delivery and everything. He was trying to make us understand what it was all about. Later on, I had a class from one of his classes, and he was just a whiz, zip. So I think he was teaching freshmen, and he was very, very positive in trying to make them make us understand.
He knew that you were at the beginning of everything.
Later on, I mean, if he had started the way I met him at the end, there was no way we'd understand what it was all about.
And was he right? Did half the class drop out or switch classes?
I think he got his quota.
Yeah. Yes. It's interesting. It's such a. I have heard that kind of similar things from people in different, even different programs too, like biology and things that the teachers were very frank about how hard it was going to be. And
well, see, I started off being I wanted to be a chemical engineer. After one course in chemistry, I said, no, that's not for me. And I switched very quickly, you know.
Okay. Well, I guess that's what college is for, right? Figuring out what you like and you don't like. So.
Yeah.
What other kinds of... So you said you took political science. Did you have to take any other humanities-type classes?
Oh, initially we took some basic English class, reading or something. Political economy was another class. That was kind of difficult. I'm trying to think of the name of the person who was the chemist, though. Fowler? Dr. Fowler?
I've heard that name before. I don't know who that is.
The orange. He's always promoting something about orange juice or something.
Huh, we'll have to look it up.
Yes, I think it was Fowler. Hopkins was expensive in those days, very expensive. But I don't think nearly as expensive as the local colleges are. I mean, the local junior colleges are today here. Boy, it's so unfortunate that young people finish school and are loaded with debt. It's crazy these days.
It is.
But I have a friend who lives right here. He's an ex-professor, but they still use his book at some of the schools. And so you know what he does every year? Changes one or two sentences, it becomes revised.
And then they all have to buy it again.
You have to buy the revised edition.
Uh-huh.
That's wrong.
And what was so Hopkins was expensive even back then. Was that a sacrifice for your family to send you there?
Oh, indeed. Yeah. I told you my father died 3 months after I had moved to school. He died on Christmas of 1950.
Oh.
And I started in September of 1950. So it was a struggle for my mother. Mm-hmm. We really didn't have any money, you know. But she made the sacrifice. And I recognized that. So summer jobs, we worked at Bethlehem Steel, shoveling iron ore in the bottom of the ore ships. And my classmates were going to the wherever they picked the samples up, and they'd go to pick up samples and run them to the lab to be tested. They had nice, easy jobs.
How come you didn't get one of those jobs?
You guess.
Wasn't open to you?
It wasn't open, no. So the signs all over Bethlehem Steel, black men. White men, the locker rooms, they were all segregated.
Hmm.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
But I think people have come to realize the economic loss. You know, it was crazy.
Yeah. So is that
this community right here, it's really quite mixed with everything,
mm-hmm.
you know, because there's no barriers there. And people realize that. The loss of money. There was no gain in segregation. I see it as a loss.
Mm-hmm.
You know. Now back to school.
So let's see. So when you were like getting toward the end of your time at Hopkins, did you know what you wanted to do as a career?
I had finished. I was commissioned out of, you know, through the ROTC program. So I had to make... I was committed to going into the military.
So you served in the ROTC at Hopkins?
Yes.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And I was a distinguished military graduate or something of the... And so I thought at one time I was going to make a career out of the military. I was in the Corps of Engineers. But I quickly came to this conclusion that military engineering wasn't the same as the thing I studied in school. So I said, I opted out. I retired after, I resigned my commission and went to work at California Highways. And I spent a few years there designing freeways. I don't like to tell people that, particularly those who live in California, because they say, boo.
And so what was different about military engineering?
It's just simple. It's simplistic, hasty engineering. Out of necessity. You don't have time to design and build. You just build something right now. But...
So you went into the Army Corps immediately after graduating from Hopkins?
Yes, I finished school in June, and I think I went in the military either in November or December of the same year. Spent 3 years, 3 months, and 15 days, and I was out. But that was good because I spent time in Germany. Well, first of all, I went to Fort Benning, Georgia, and jumped out of planes.
Was that part of your basic training? Or
that was part of requirements for a regular Army officer.
Okay.
You have to either go to Ranger School or jump school. So I elected I'm not too smart. I jumped out of planes.
Well, Ranger School is pretty tough, I hear, too, so maybe you were smart.
And then I was lucky. I had an assignment to go to Germany, and I spent time in Germany, and it was a good tour. What more can I add?
I don't know. What, I mean, anything you want to say about...
I was, you know, a platoon leader and then a company commander, that sort of thing.
You were, okay.
And then I got out quickly. Mm-hmm. Oh, the unit came back from Germany, and I was discharged in the state of Washington at Fort... I can't call the name of the...
In Washington State.
In the state of Washington. But anyhow, after being discharged, I drove into California in January of 1958. And I saw a gentleman cutting lawn in the Bay Area in January. And I'd never seen that before. You've never seen that if you're living in Maryland.
That's right.
Are you from the East Coast?
I'm from Ohio, kind of Midwest.
Yes. But. Well, that was an eye-opener. I said, oh, boy, this is where I want to be. And fortunately, I applied for 3 days. I just drove into California, into the Sacramento area. And in one day, I had 3 job offers.
Really?
They were hiring like crazy. And California had the big highway program, so I opted to go into California Highways. And I chose Southern California. There are offices all over the state of California. I opted to go to the District 7 in Los Angeles. And after about 13 years there, I decided to go to the Transit Authority because they were expanding. They were getting money, and all of a sudden, and they... were operating bus yards in old streetcar barns and stuff like that. Very inefficient. So I became in charge of all the bus facility construction.
Okay.
And built bus yards all over the metropolitan area. That's when I had a lot of real smart guys working for me and made my job easy. Mm-hmm. I had left design and gone into construction, and that was good in a sense. It wasn't a dress-up kind of thing. So I was on the cheap, almost like my son, I reflect. He's a musician, but he plays in the show. So he said, I go to work any kind of way. They put a mask on and a costume, and I'm off.
So you wound up in kind of like a management role?
Yes. Yeah, I just reported to the chief engineer. That was my immediate boss. Mm-hmm. And in the transit authority, no one messed with the engineering department. We had a mission to do, and we tried to accomplish it. But very little interference with what you were doing, you know. The politics were always on the other side of the aisle, bus operations or train operations or what have you. Mm-hmm. But we had a job, build us a brand new bus yard or build this or repair this. And that's what we did. Mm-hmm. So,
what do you think about your Hopkins training was helpful in your career?
Oh, I don't think there was any question that it helped tremendously. Because I did have to give instruction to those smarter guys, you know. But I always found that they were very loyal. I never felt threatened that someone was trying to get my job or anything. And as a consequence, it was just one big happy family. And the engineers came from all over the place. I had a rather unique experience working in highways. One of the guys was from, who was the first? I don't know, he was a foreigner. But he wanted to get his citizenship, so he asked me if I would go with him to be a character reference for him, and I had to appear and go and be interviewed about this to make sure that he was a person of high moral standards and that sort of thing. Uh-huh. Boy, if I had told some lies, didn't I? But anyhow, he got that. You know, he got his citizenship. And after that, I went about five times with different people doing the same thing.
Oh, that's interesting.
And how many people get that chance to go to immigration and help someone become a citizen?
Yeah, that's wonderful.
That was a good experience, too, because I remember going to one of those sessions where they got the citizenship. Try to hold that little flag up like that. I saw one guy hold that thing up for 2 hours, just waving it. Never dropped it one bit. Hard to do. Mm-hmm. And we take citizenship for granted. It's real for these people. They want to become citizens. Mm-hmm. And it's a very positive kind of thing to see.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to one of those?
I never have. I would love to.
If you ever get a chance, go. You realize how important citizenship is to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like a lot of your job, it wasn't just, I mean, at some point it wasn't about designing anymore. It was kind of about leadership and management and things like that. Where do you think you learned that? Just through experience or?
Through experience. Mm-hmm. And I'm telling you, all of the facilities all the bus facilities in Los Angeles were just old. It was nothing new. So we had to tear down the old buildings and build or phase the construction and tear it down. So we kind of put plans together. And I think I learned that from highways, because so often you have to build highways on the same route as the old one, and you have to stage the construction and move traffic from here to there. The same thing with the bus yards. We had to keep the buses going, and we couldn't just move those buses to another place. We had to work within the system and keep things going. So it was very good.
Sounds complicated.
But you learn how to do that. And sometimes you make mistakes. But mistakes are correctable, too. Or you hide them.
I found some other stuff, some like newsletters from the transportation department and stuff from the 70s that said you did a lot of going to schools and talking to at career day and things like that. Do you remember doing those kinds of things? Talking to students about being an engineer, yeah.
No, but I've gone back to a lot of the reunions, quite a few.
For transportation or for Hopkins?
At Hopkins.
Oh, okay. Oh, this is...
you're talking about...
Here in California, when you were working in California.
did I participate in a thing like Career Days?
Yeah, uh-huh.
Oh, you know, I had. With the local schools.
Yes.
Trying to encourage others and mentor others and that kind of thing. Yes, indeed.
Okay.
I did that for a while. See, I'm glad. See, you forget a lot of things.
Uh-huh.
Yes. And also, I participated in a Urban League program. You familiar with the Urban League? It was one of those, like the NAACP, to promote job growth and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And they would have classes to help people pass the federal exams or this exam. And so I would volunteer to give classes in math, just simple math. But I'll never forget, I was on a job, one of the construction sites, right next to the freeway, and one of the students I had taught saw me in the field, went around the block, got off the freeway, came back, and came into the yard and said that thanked me because he had finally got a real good job.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that sounds really rewarding.
Yeah, really quite rewarding to get that kind of thing, you know.
And was that in Los Angeles?
In Los Angeles.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, every Saturday morning I would go to and give a class in mathematics, just basic mathematics, nothing sophisticated, like functions of the complex variable.
I don't even know what that is.
I don't either.
That's great. And then, so did you... You're so far from home in California. Was that a hard thing to be away from Baltimore? Was it a big cultural adjustment? Or?
Oh, I never thought about it. Even when I finished school, it was very hard for me to get a job in Baltimore. I interviewed for a couple of jobs with the city, and I think they just played a game with me. They were giving me a quiz that my classmates never endured, that kind of thing.
Really?
Yeah.
So they made you take a test as part of the
interview? Well, they would ask me dumb questions, you know. So California was a lot simpler.
Okay.
And they were starving for engineers when I got out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
I applied for the jobs in Baltimore between the time I graduated and before I went into the military, just a few months, but very unsuccessful.
Hmm.
So being in the military and not... I never thought... I knew I would never go back to Baltimore to live.
Okay.
And when I saw the guy cutting grass in January, so, and I think you'd like it here if it were not such a bad day.
Oh, I still think it's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, I mean, I feel like, yeah, you had a lot of opportunities to kind of step outside the Baltimore bubble. You know, you went to Hopkins and then being in the military and being a leader there, you know.
So yes.
The West Coast just had more opportunities.
Well,
I
was a lieutenant and second lieutenant, then first lieutenant. And I never made captain because I got out. But I think that leadership role helped me in later on. And so I have no regrets about spending time in the military. I think in general, I try to find the best in things. Some people always try to find the worst, you know, and they're always complaining. I'm not a complainer. Never. I don't think I ever have been a complainer. And as a consequence, I think that helped me. If you see good things in things, it can be quite rewarding.
Mm-hmm. So have you, you've made mention a couple times of reunions and things. Have you stayed connected with Hopkins after graduating?
Have I done what?
Stayed connected with Hopkins after you graduated.
No, they keep being connected with me.
They're connecting with you, right? Well, tell me about the fun stuff. It sounds like you've participated in some reunions.
I missed that.
Oh, sorry. It sounds like you participated in some reunions.
Yes. I was back there this year. I didn't sign up for it, but I was planning to go. My wife went to Morgan State University, and I set up a scholarship there in her name. So I went back there for a luncheon, and it was at the same time the Hopkins reunion. I went to the luncheon, and the next morning I was in a hospital, in a hotel in Columbia. I called the front desk and said, "Please bring me some Pepto." I said, "My stomach is killing me." Half an hour later, I called and I said, "Send an ambulance. I'm dying."
Oh, no.
I had a kidney stone. Worst thing in the world. When I came out of recovery, and I know I'm departing from what you're after, but when I came out of recovery, I asked the attendant, "Was it a boy or a girl?" It was very, very painful.
Oh, no.
So I missed the reunion.
I see.
I missed it. I had planned to just show up unannounced, but no luck.
No chance. That's too bad. So your wife went to Morgan State. Did you meet her while you were a student at Hopkins?
No, I met her in junior high school.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So you had known her for a long time. She was from your neighborhood?
She's from Baltimore. Yeah, we grew up together. She lived in East Baltimore, and I was on the west side primarily. And she was from a big family. I didn't learn how to really count until I met her family. Yeah. I think there were 10 of in her family. I had just a brother.
Okay.
But we were married for 53 years, and she passed in 2011. Devastating, because she had Parkinson's disease. And a lot of people only associated the shakes, but it robbed her of her memory, mm-hmm. just like Alzheimer's.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sorry. And, so did you marry her when you came out of the service? Or
yes, immediately. Okay. Oh, that was my proposal. I didn't have to get down on my knees and all that stuff. I called her from California. I had gotten the job, and my proposal was, "How would you like to live in California?" Now, she's from a family of 10, and I said, "Well, this is maybe a good time to escape." I think that she would turn me down, not leaving her big family. I was wrong. I was wrong.
Wow.
But it was a good marriage. We enjoyed each other. Mm-hmm. Before you leave, I'll show you pictures of her. Very lovely lady. And I said lady, not just lady. She was very ladylike, mm-hmm. unlike me. You know. But, you know, they say that opposites attract, and I think indeed we were opposite, but we had a wonderful marriage.
Mm-hmm. She must have had a sense of adventure to come all the way out here to...
Yes, leaving her family, and all the other family are still back on the East. But, you know, it's a funny thing. All of her family still call me all the time. Nieces and nephews, you know. Sometimes, you know, I'm like blood with them, but they all call me, and that makes you really feel good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, to keep that connection, That is good. And you have two sons, you said?
Yes, uh-huh, mm-hmm. Yes.
And one lives around here?
Both of them. One lives with me. After my wife passed, he moved in with me.
I see.
So he told me this morning, "Get up, you got company coming, clean up the house, do something, hide all those books. Don't look under the table for my books."
There's nothing wrong with having lots of books around, yeah. I think.
But one is a musician, and the other one works in the plumbing section at Home Depot.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
But he was a craftsman. He used to do tile work. But it dried up, you know, during the recession. That worked, and so he. And now, with age, he doesn't want to be down on his knees doing this kind of thing. So it's mm-hmm. a little easier for him. And so he knows a lot of the plumbing stuff, just mm-hmm. being in construction like that.
Yeah.
So.
Huh. I can see both sides. You played music yourself growing up, and then, you know, yes. They're kind of like both sides of your...
Well, I didn't have the talent. I would just play music.
Uh-huh.
But the youngest one, that was his calling.
Mm-hmm.
He plays virtually everything. And I said, "Elliot, how do you do it?" But, you know, I remember when he was before he got his driver's license, I would have to take him to school in Hollywood at a rehearsal studio. And people from the movies and all the industries would come in and bring him music because they had to rehearse a part. And he said, I would have to just sit there. He was, you know, 17, maybe 16. Or so. And he said, I'd have to not only just play the music, I would have to transpose it to a different key, the whole bit. And so he said, I just had to learn how to read. And he said, I can read good. So I've seen him sit down with a big band, never saw the music, just start and start playing.
Wow.
So he had to, he was gifted in that sense. Mm-hmm. Never really practiced much.
Really?
Mm-hmm. I remember playing with the classical music. He would play that thing right straight through. And one little measure he wouldn't know, but he would never stop. He'd put his own thing in and just keep on going. Mm-hmm. And the teacher said, no, 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 no.
That's funny.
But
that must be an amazing thing to see as a parent, to see your kid have that kind of talent. You know.
Yes. Were you asking me a question?
No, I was just saying that must be an amazing thing to see your kid have that kind of talent.
Yeah, so. Yeah. Well, he's 53 now. And most musicians have two jobs, you know, one with music, but he's never had another job other than music. And he's been in over 60 countries in the world. In the early years, he traveled a lot. Now he just, when he has a vacation, if he has 10 days off, he's out of here going somewhere. He loves music. He loves art. He told me one time, he said, Dad, I've been in almost all the major museums in the world. And he said, it's surprising how much art moves from one. He said, I'll see a piece in Philadelphia one week and go overseas and there's the same piece.
Yeah, right.
He said, I don't think it's a copy. It's the same piece. It moves.
And you've done a bit of traveling yourself in retirement, right?
Somewhat. Yeah, I went with Hopkins a couple of times. What's the latest number who runs that department now? The travel thing.
I don't
know. We get things every day. Week. Uh-huh. They've really expanded the travel program at Hopkins. Mm-hmm. So beautiful tours.
Where have you gone?
I went to Tanzania in Africa. That's where they have the Serengeti, the big plane. Mm-hmm. What a zoo. And I wondered after I spent all that money for that trip, I said, why did I do that? I left Los Angeles with all those people from the zoo walking up and down the street. Two-legged beast. No, but that was a beautiful trip. Mm-hmm. Really, it's just amazing. You know, you go to the zoo, you see two elephants or something. There you see hundreds of elephants. And the wildebeest by the thousands.
Wow.
And I recall one... Lou and I were together in Africa.
Okay, you went on the same trip?
Yeah, we watched a lion was right beside our bus. We had parked and the lion was right there. But he wasn't paying any attention to the bus. He saw a baby wildebeest across the street. And all of a sudden he pounced up and ran across the road and bing, hey, big kill right there.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's funny. I bet you never would have imagined doing that with Lou when you were, you know, 19 years old in college.
Yes, yeah. Well, that's a beautiful trip. Tanzania is it's the only place, I think, in the world where you find the stone tanzanite. Mm. You know that stone?
Yeah.
Beautiful stone. But I guess a lot of those big stones, and you can't even find them, or a lot of the little small stones. And I knew my cousin loved that stone, so I bought her one. It was very nice. She was always thankful. She said everyone just admires it, mm-hmm. You know.
Nice.
Do you travel very often?
I used to. I have a three-year-old son now, so it's not easy to get away.
Yeah, I understand, certainly.
But yes. Well, let's see. Is there anything else you want to add about Hopkins that I haven't asked you about?
No, I try to support the fund drives on a limited basis, but most times I respond to that, mm-hmm. because I realize what has meant to me to have graduated from Hopkins.
Mm-hmm.
I was afforded a wonderful education, and without the help of a lot of the professors and the like, I would have never made it. But I think a few bent over backwards to push me and help me. Mm-hmm. Hopkins has a lot of, I mean, these guys are, the professors are real scholars. And Abe Woolman, do you know that name?
I do.
Yeah. I took a class in sanitary engineering under him, or something like that.
Wonderful.
So they taught freshman classes, not freshman, but undergraduate classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess his son was at the, I don't know if his son was at the university when I was there.
Yeah.
But is he with the university now, the son?
I don't know if he's still active. But he was for many years, yeah,
yes,
part of the university.
So, what else can I add?
Anything. What makes Hopkins...
You know more about me right now than I know about myself.
You just hadn't thought about any of it in a while.
So how are you going to... What are you going to do with all of this?
What we do is we'll put a copy of it in the university archives. And it'll be... So it'll be available for researchers if anyone's interested in studying the history of Hopkins.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. So
that's wonderful.
That'll be good. Yeah. And...
Did you do the same thing at Georgetown? Well, no, no, not Georgetown, George Washington.
Sometimes I did. Yeah, I did do some interviews, and I also helped students do interviews themselves, which is really good because it's an opportunity for them to learn about
You studied
Hopkins.
This sort of thing in college? So.
I did, yeah.
Where?
At University of Maryland, actually.
So I got
a degree in history and in library science. So.
Yes.
Yeah, but it's great. The more people I talk to, the more I start seeing how all of your stories fit together,
yes.
You know? So it's really rewarding to talk
to. Well, I was kind of disappointed. I was hoping that my kids would get degrees. Neither has a degree. But I can't say they're unsuccessful.
Yeah.
The musician has done extremely well. And I would think that if he didn't do that, he'd be a docent in a library, in a museum or something.
Uh-huh, yeah.
He has an eye for art, and he just spots unusual things.
Yeah.
That escapes most people, you know. And, I know one time I was in an Italian restaurant and had all this ivy up in the ceiling. I saw that ivy for years. He walked in there and looked up and said, "Oh, look, Dad, it spells Italy." That sort of, you know.
Yeah.
And so he knows art. Oh, my brother took him to the National Gallery of Art in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And he said my son was walking, and he was only about, 10 years old or so. My brother said he was just going through, said Rembrandt this and that, you know, or naming the artists one after another.
Huh.
He said, "Oh, Dad," he told my brother, "that one was where Maryland got its name from." I don't know where he learns.
Yeah.
And even today, he never watches the news, but he knows what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
He's a real smart kid.
Yeah.
But he dropped out of junior college. It was funny. His first semester, he took 7 courses, made 4 A's and 3 B's. The last semester, he was there. He failed everything.
Oh, no. Well, I guess maybe he just decided it wasn't for him.
He was in Japan when he was 18, playing music.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So he's traveled a lot, and he doesn't just travel. He knows exactly what he wants to do, and he does it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
He's gone to South Africa and been out to the white whales, the white something, orca. No,
yeah.
Not the whales. Well, sharks, the killers.
The great white sharks, yeah.
He's gone down in a cage and that sort of thing.
Sounds very exciting.
Fearless.
Yeah.
His job has afforded him, he's been up to, on the stratosphere right here.
Mm-hmm.
All those crazy rides up there. You couldn't get me close to those things.
Yeah.
He loves that kind of thing.
Yeah. That's
even today, he just enjoys, and he plays well.
Mm-hmm.
He plays Bach and Scriabin and this person and that person.
Mm-hmm.
And he has quite a library of music at his home.
Yeah. Well, that's good. So he found his own way without having to go to college then. So.
Yeah, he's done very well. He's owns 3 properties here, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I push him because he makes good money. He works for Cirque. they were just recently sold by an investor who typically downgrades and cuts, makes cuts in the program, and then resells the property at a later date at a big, huge profit. So, but he doesn't feel threatened, he said, because the only thing that would threaten him, they might go to canned music mm-hmm. instead of live music. But other than that, he feels rather secure. And I guess he feels that if it does fail, someone wants someone who can play.
In this town, I think so, yeah.
Yeah. You have a great school there that when they Hopkins went with the Peabody.
Oh, I know. It's wonderful.
Yeah. I went in the last time, not the last time, I went into Levering Hall and some kid was practicing or something. Oh, what? The piano just exploded with music.
Yeah, it's
a
nice.
Lot of talent in this world.
It adds a good dimension to Hopkins, you know, so it's not so much just about like the hard sciences and and pre-med and things
That's
like that.
Right.
But yeah, it adds a nice dimension.
I was back there. My son came when I got sick just recently. It was earlier this year. My son came back. I drove him past the hospital, and I was amazed how it's expanded so. Block after block in all directions.
It has, yeah.
Tremendous institution.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It really is.
So when are you going back?
This afternoon.
Early?
My flight is at 5. Yeah.
I see.
Yeah. Well, let me.
I wish I could take you to lunch. But I'm going to be leaving. I'm going to Europe next Wednesday.
Uh-huh.
And I've got so many things to do.
I understand. That's a big trip. Well, let me go ahead. Let me turn this off and we can keep chatting.
Oh, is it still on?
Yeah.
I thought you had been finished.
Oh, no. I would tell you. But, well, let me just tell you, you know, since we're still on, thank you so much for participating. It's
Certainly.
Been really great.